Welcome to the Well Woman Show, where we use intersectional feminism, mindfulness, leadership, and strategy to support smart women to change the world without anxiety, insecurity, and burnout. On the show, we challenge the status quo and support you to unlearn harmful messages that keep you playing small so you can activate your superpowers and live with joy, confidence, and ease. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi.
Then there is patriarchy, the social conditioning, and across the cultures in different ways. Women have been told, like, our life makes meaning if we are of service to others. You know, you watch interviews or read books of these incredible women across the globe who are your role models, and they've had the same struggles as a woman in a small town.
Hello, hello, well women. On the show today, I interview Shweta Vikram, a doctor of Ayurveda and author of 14 best-selling books. The goal of her work is to alleviate stress and elevate the overall quality of her clients' lives through Ayurveda-based health and wellness coaching. Shweta specializes in addressing disordered sleep, anxiety, digestion, appetite, and mood. So if you have any of those, you'll want to listen up. With a master's degree in strategic communications from Columbia University and a postgraduate degree in sports nutrition, she applies her expansive knowledge to shape her approach. Shweta's upcoming book, The Loss That Binds Us, is set to release this month, and it's a heartfelt guide through grief. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, NBC, as well as a documentary collaboration with Dr. Deepak Chopra. On the show today, we discuss self-care, trusting women's wisdom, and menopause from an Ayurvedic perspective, her new book called The Loss That Binds Us, about grief and loss, and how Ayurveda takes a holistic approach to health issues, looking at all contributing factors rather than just treating individual symptoms. And happening next month, you will remember that the Well Woman Show has teamed up with 100 Women Albuquerque and will be meeting May 1st at 5:30 p.m. in Albuquerque to amplify our impact and assist under-supported organizations. Come be inspired by the collective power of women. Join us to meet like-minded women committed to making a difference. Members can nominate local nonprofits and promote a business or event during our meeting. I'll be there facilitating the community sharing portion of the event, and I'd love to see you there. Head over to wellwomanlife.com/radio for all the information and links. The Well Woman Show is thankful for support from Collective Action Strategies, a consulting firm that supports systemic change so that women and families thrive, and by the Well Woman Life Movement Challenge Quiz at wellwomanlife.com/quiz. As always, all the links and information are at wellwomanlife.com/radio. I'm speaking with Shweta Vikram on the show today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you.
I am too. I love what you do. I just actually want to start by having you share with listeners, who are you in the world today?
I am a storyteller and a writer before anything else. And that's my modality for navigating the world. And that's my approach for helping others heal. I don't think I heal others. I just work as a guide. The work is theirs. And the wisdom is Ayurveda, yoga, and Reiki. I'm just a channel. That, I think, is how I show up in the world, what I do. And, you know, I've been writing since I was a little kid. I always knew I wanted a book of mine. I just didn't know how that works. I would practice like my autograph. And it's kind of cool to see things manifest and not, you know, you do the hard work. Manifestation just doesn't happen. Yeah, I think that's who I am. A storytelling Ayurvedic doctor who loves her headstands and Bollywood dancing just as much as I love people and books.
Oh, I love it. And I want to pick up on something you said because it really resonated with me and what we do on the show here, which is to say we're really trying to lift up the conversation about trusting women to know what they need and what they want and to trust their own wisdom and that they have the tools already. They don't need to go out and get, you know, all these self-care, this and that, although massages are nice and that kind of thing. But we don't need those things. We already have so much to work with. And so Shweta, when did that change? When were we taught to not trust ourselves?
It's obviously gender bias, misogyny. Then there is patriarchy, the social conditioning, and across the cultures in different ways. Women have been told, like in not so many words, yet so many actions, we've been shown that Our life makes meaning if we are of service to others. And I know I'm making it sound really raw and cruel, but I think that's the underlying message because you watch interviews or read books of these incredible women across the globe who are your role models, and they've had the same struggles as a woman in a small town in India, for that matter, because placing yourself at the bottom of the totem pole makes you a good woman. Saying what you need makes you rebel and aggressive. And I love this conversation because changing that narrative is so necessary because women haven't been, yes, on the surface. And I love that you touched upon massage because I am a sucker for massages. But that's not self-care. That's more about taking care of your health and well-being. Self-care is about self-love and self-worth. And until we love ourselves fully, can we truly love others? Because if we did, then one day we won't get into an argument with your partner, your friend, your family member, your pet, your child, your friend, your colleague. It's a projection of emotions that have been buried and buried and buried over centuries, if not for longer. Over, and we've seen our mothers, our grandmothers, or heard stories of our great grandmothers do that. Then we go out into the world, we see our friends and our colleagues do that because a woman who speaks up gets labeled. And as you get older, there is so much beauty in getting older because you really stop caring as much. I don't think you stop caring totally because that's just not possible. But the degrees and the people, all of that shifts. And you realize, oh, me saying that I need 30 minutes of quiet time is true self-care. Going out to dinner with friends, which is great, but then you're overstimulated and you come back and you're spending 2 hours reflecting about the conversations, that might not be restful when you're working 20 hours a day. So I think women need to remind each other that self-care starts with exactly what you said, self. It's about taking care of your needs. Sure, it might be bubble bath on some days, but on other days, saying, I don't feel well enough to cook a meal, and you shouldn't feel guilty about it.
Shweta, what are you seeing as the kind of outcomes, the problems that women are dealing with in generations of not putting ourselves first and not practicing self-care? How is that showing up?
Showing up everywhere because Ayurveda will tell you our mind, body, and spirit, they're connected. And spirit, I don't mean that in a woo-woo way, just spiritually. There is more to life than just our mind and our body. There is energy. And it shows up in our relationships, it shows up in our careers, it shows up in our well-being. A woman who's, and like a lot of my work, and I would say a large majority of my work is around empowering women's mental and emotional well-being. And I'm not a psychiatrist, so it's from a very holistic space. And we call it simple, but it's not simple for someone who's suffering from constipation. That's tied to your mental well-being, insomnia, leading to gut health issues. I know for sure, like more women than men, but I believe about 70% of autoimmune diseases is something that women suffer from. Suppressed emotions, repressed emotions are the root cause of diseases, according to Ayurveda. So when you look at that connection, if you don't feel 100% healthy or well, how can we show up in a wholesome way at work, in our relationships, in our so-called duties and responsibilities? So I feel like women are exhausted, depleted, playing catch up, and not feeling like they are enough or they're doing enough. But I also have to say, I recently gave a talk, maybe around Valentine's Day, and it was a multi-generational conversation. I hadn't thought of it until I entered the room, and I was like, oh, there's a 20-year-old, and there are people and women in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And we all saw hope and felt optimistic looking at that 20-year-old in the room. The fact that on a Thursday night, she had decided to attend a talk by an Ayurvedic doctor instead of going to a bar. Again, don't get me wrong, I'm not shunning going to a bar. But in that moment, this group of women realized, girls, women, however you want to define them, that their self-care and well-being, gathering information, is more important than going out to a bar with their friends. They could do another day. That was like, wow, you are changing the narrative. I would have felt guilt in my 20s if I told my friends, no, I need to go to a talk. It's in the 30s where you started feeling, no, I need to own my life. And that came from a place of rebellion. It didn't come from a place of self-care. Seeing the generations change, seeing that paradigm shift, it makes me feel more optimistic for the future.
And certainly I speak to a lot of professionals and women in my community, and I know that there are some really serious health and life outcomes that are negatively impacting women, some of which, you mentioned. There's a really high rate of burnout, which you referred, I mean, I think you mentioned that, like just exhaustion, women being exhausted, and heart problems, and chronic disease, and autoimmune. And so we're seeing all of these major, tangible sort of things, but there's also the invisible things, like the more invisible, right? The mental health, the relationships, the stress, the sleepless nights, the things that we don't see and necessarily have really great data on. So tell me, how would you treat someone when they come to you and say that they have some of these problems?
So that's the beauty of Ayurveda. It is customized and it looks at an individual and their health in the now. So what I mean by that, if someone comes in and tells me, oh, I have burnout, right? So I'll have a conversation around them, like what is burnout to them? Because burnout to me might be different than compared to burnout, even in terms of stress. So again, in Ayurveda, there are three primary doshas that we talk about, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. So the healing modalities are based on that. So I'll check in which dosha is imbalance. I'm looking at the tongue, I'm checking their pulse. It's the form. So the consultation is 90 minutes. I'm trying to find out what the life story is. What did they eat the night before? What's been the pattern for the last week, the month? Because there is storytelling. Diseases tell us stories. I'll give you an example for someone who has high vata imbalance. They will show signs of constipation, anxiety, restlessness, twitching, versus someone who is high pitta. And all of these doshas in balance, they're great. But we're talking about imbalances which might or have a tendency to lead towards diseases, or at least show up as signs and symptoms. For somebody with pitta imbalance, they tend to have a high burnout. Pittas are high achievers, they're world leaders, they're orators, but they often don't know how to set boundaries for their own selves. Everything is like very intense. So their level of burnout is very different from a Vata kind of burnout where they can't focus. Their body is here, but the mind is somewhere else. And a Kapha person walks in with an imbalance and they're like, I don't have the motivation. Or they attach to a conversation from 10 years ago. Like Kaphas have an elephant's memory, right? An elephant is a Kapha animal. So when you think of it, it's beautiful how we are a miniature of nature. So I'm like, they are attached to all of these things that are not serving them. And their burnout would be, I'm not motivated. I'm on the couch eating desserts. I'm on the couch, like not wanting to talk to people, eating potato chips, holding on to emotions, holding on to clothing. So you see how the minute, and they could have dual dosha imbalance going on as well, right? But one primary dosha, in Sanskrit, it's called Vikruti, or imbalance speaks up. So then we start talking about diet, lifestyle. In my practice, like I will not put people onto herbs right away. It's always diet and lifestyle because that's an easy fix. Then you should stick to Western medicine if you want a quick fix. If you want lifelong or life transformative changes, a person has to make those changes. And I would say, let's do this for 3 weeks. Then we do a follow-up, see how you feel between 3 to 4 weeks. Like, and I've had a few clients this week who've, been battling gut issues, weight issues, insomnia issues. And it's an incredible week because they've all reported back, like literally reported back saying, I feel so much better, or people have been noticing, or my sleep is 70% better. And I always remind them, it's not me. You are doing the work.
Yeah, you're providing the structure and some of the tools, but they're doing the work. And so I want to ask you, as we know, in Western medicine, hormones and menopause has been something that has not been researched or talked about or even taught in medical school very well. And as a result, we have, especially now with so many women in their 40s and 50s and beyond, in the workforce, still active in life, nowhere near the end of their lives, right? We have a huge population dealing with hormonal issues and menopause without really without any significant support from the medical community. How does Ayurveda handle that?
Oh, I love this question. And I say that because the spirits part that I was talking about, this is where Ayurveda approaches menopause in a very holistic way. I mean, it approaches everything very holistically, but this is just more wholesome. To your point, there are no conversations in corporates anywhere. We talk about maternity leave, but we're not talking about menopause. This is where women are in the peak of their career, especially when you're in your 40s or early 50s. You're like, you're climbing the ladder because if you've chosen to have a family, have a partner, have kids, they are on their own. You finally can focus on you. And then you're hit with menopause. And when you notice the literature out there, everything is like a woman is hit with something, right? So all the bias has set in. We're thinking of it as a negative thing. But Ayurveda, there are phases of life. So Kapha is when you're born, it's an anabolic phase. Your body is building, all of that, until you hit puberty. That's Pitta. So Pitta is up until we hit menopause, and nothing is overnight. It's over a period of time, right? So menopause until the time we die is the Vata stage of life. So Ayurveda will also remind you, like, to accept the beauty in the space that you have to make choices for yourself. So automatically, like, my body language changes when I say that because I'm not fighting, like, oh, I need to be there. It's like I have the experience and my body is going through the change that it's going through. I'm not going to fight it. I'm going to accept it. So the minute you choose that self-love, self-care, self-worth comes in, your inner dialogue around menopause changes. Again, from an Ayurvedic perspective, this is not a bad thing. When we have pain, and every woman, again, depending on the doshic imbalance that they come into with menopause, their symptoms will be different. So from Western medicine, like, we know, like, oh, most women might have hot flashes or they might bleed for X number of days. Ayurveda will tell you if you're Pitta, there's fire, there's heat, there's hot flashes. Versus if there's a Vata imbalance, there's cramp. So, again, it's like you're offering women relief from a very holistic perspective.
The solution, then, very simplistically in Ayurveda, would be to balance
Emotions.
doshas.
Very much so. And also the mind aspect, right, of acceptance. We can't keep fighting. And this is a real struggle for a large majority of women. We want the body of our 20-year-olds when we were 20, but we want the wisdom and the peace that we have in our 40s or 50s, right? And it's just that acceptance. You can't, it's Aging is a natural progression. And it's not a place of judgment. It's because I also understand we live in a society which is extremely ageist. But you can't change people. What you can do is work on your own thoughts, like accepting that phase with, like, yeah, you know what? I've earned this. So I feel like so much of the conversation is also internal as it is external, right? So
Yeah.
you're working on your insides. And then again, to your point, it's the doshas that we balance.
And then I wonder when there are multiple factors, right? So maybe there's menopause and maybe there's other issues. I feel like in Western medicine, you're treated like a car. Like, okay, let's go fix the engine isn't working. Let's fix the this or the that. Whereas in a holistic practice, you're looking at everything and all of the pieces. So it's not just, oh, there's a menopause problem, or there's a depression problem, or there's whatever else. It's how do those all play together?
It very much is, and there's cause and effect. Someone might have no depression, but if you and this might be TMI, but if someone has an imbalance where they've bled for 3 months, I've had clients who bled for months, and so that will create depression because you can't, you're working from home, you're not seeing people, you don't know what's going on with your body. So from an Ayurvedic perspective, you're not just put on medication to treat your mind. It's holistic because you are going through this, so you're also looking at a definite period. It's not always going to be this way. Just the way the seasons change, we accept, like, a body is going through changes. I'll give you an example. I have a client who there was onset of insomnia once menopause hit. And so we've been working together for a few years now. And so now she's into menopause and insomnia. And so all we worked on was a diet and lifestyle. She was eating foods which were, in her case, was counterintuitive for what her body needed, for her mind to shut. Again, Ayurveda will also look at, like, are you having insomnia as related to menopause, like, do you have trouble falling asleep? Or is your mind agitated? Or do you go to sleep and then you wake up during early hours, which is the Vata time of the. So it gets very, very specific. So when you're helping a woman, it's like, no, you don't just have a Vata imbalance. Let's just talk about how else does it show up. If you're waking up between hours of 2 a.m. to 6 a.m., that is Vata time of the night. So, and Vata's qualities are very light. So how can we apply the opposite quality, something heavy like sesame oil massage on your feet, so that heaviness helps you sleep better? So it's instead of labeling someone and saying, this is menopause, you're destined to go through this, it's like, no, let's just work together, see, we change your diet, we change your lifestyle. What kind of breath work can you do to calm your mind when you're judging, like, oh, my friend is going through menopause and, you know, she didn't have this, but I am going through this. So to keep, and that can be very pitta, that criticism, that judgment. So identifying those qualities and making them people's empowering tools or women's empowering tools, as opposed to, oh, my situation sucks. So again, changing that narrative of story of healing.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Dr. Shweta Vikram on the Well Woman Show. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and do the Superpowers for Success segment and also talk about her brand new book, The Loss That Binds Us. And we really haven't talked about this, about how you guide people through grief. So we'll be right back. If you're in burnout or in major transition, this is your time to figure out what's holding you back from making the changes you need in order to live your fullest, most joyful life. The causes of all our challenges, personal or professional, can actually be rooted in the lack of internal superpowers and external supports. Our Well Woman Life Framework tells you which stage of the Well Woman life cycle you're in and what to do about it, so you can truly start living your life. You can find out more at wellwomanlife.com/quiz. We're back on the Well Woman Show with Ayurvedic Dr. Shweta Vikram. And we're going into the segment called Superpowers for Success. And I also just want to mention that her new book, The Loss That Binds Us, comes out in April this month. Shweta, tell us just briefly, and then we'll get into the superpowers. Why did you write this book? How did that come about? And what do you hope to do with this book?
Sure. So, you know, unfortunately, in May of 2023, both my father and my father-in-law completely unexpectedly passed away within 2 days of each other. And we'd see them 3 to 4 weeks prior to that. So this was all very sudden. When I came back to New York, so, you know, you were attending a cremation in one city and like mourning in the other. And it was also around my mom's death anniversary. So it was just, let's say, I call it tsunami of emotions, right? And so we come back to New York and I started to think about, like, there was no manual or grief manual or literature that I could refer to when we were going through what we were going through. Having said that, grief is also very universal and it does not discriminate. It touches each one of us at some point in our lives. So I'm like, when most of the books, which are brilliant, but they are more in hindsight or in reflection or when people have moved on to the next step, like I wanted something raw and gritty out there where, you know, yes, I might be on the other side, but what is the other side? There are days where I'm still in puddle of tears. And then there are 2 weeks where I'm absolutely fine. I was extremely close to my dad and he was my confidant. And, you know, we were also buddies, but he's the one who, you know, always introduced me to books and said, if you learn to love books, you'll never be alone. Mm-hmm. And writing, everything was his doing, right? So this was my homage to him, but also he would tell me, like, we need to normalize grief. People don't talk, and it comes back to emotional, physical, and mental well-being. We don't talk about grief. We leave unaddressed grief, show up to work. Grieving employees are more absent. They are not fully productive. You know, companies lose work. Families feel like they've lost a family member, and metaphorically, they're losing another one because we don't talk about grief. People develop addictive habits. So all of those reasons, and I realize 108 is an auspicious number in yoga and Hinduism, but also across many cultures. So I wanted people to have some things, because when you're dealing with something so difficult, you don't want pedantic literature. Like that's for a whole different time of reading. Something simple that also tells you it's okay to go through those dark phases because that's the nature of grief.
Yes. What was the significance of 108?
So I can speak from like in Ayurveda, the massage that we do, Marma massage, which is around the chi, they're 107 points, sometimes 108 points if we can considering the crown chakra. There are 108 pilgrimage sites in Hinduism. So there are even in any rosary, a lot of people, the rosary has 108 beads. So when you look across cultures, like it has a very significant number, and the sum total is nice, 9 of 108, which again holds a value in certain religions and cultures.
Okay, great. Well, we will link to the new book in the show notes at wellwomanlife.com/radio for those listening. And I want to ask you a few questions to allow listeners to get to know you a little better. And the first question is, what does success in life mean for you?
I love that. I would say it's being able to have an impact on a large scale. So whether, and by large, I mean it could be two people in the community, something which is bigger than me. Being able to have a sustainable environment for my family, that's success to me, where I can put my feet up 2 days of a week and say, this is family and friends time, that's success. It doesn't always happen for a small business owner. So when it does, I say that's success. And yes, you know, even if one person listens to the show, right, to our podcast interview, two people buy the book, and if their lives change, for me, that's success. It's having those that impact in your inner circles, but also in your communities, because when we heal, our families and friends heal, then our communities heal, then our neighborhoods heal, then our cities heal.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. I actually talk a lot about that on the
Nice.
show, how we start, start small and then it impacts the larger. Shweta, when did you know you were really good at what you do?
I have to say it's changed its forms of what I do, but I've always been a speaker, writer, healer. Because my aunts would say, when you say something, people believe you. And that's because I have radical, it's almost like radical honesty. It's being honest is very important to me. So I think I realize it also comes with its own down pitfalls, like people don't always like honesty, but it showed me that when people don't like it, it's a reflection of what they don't agree with within themselves. So I don't need to change. So it was at a very young age, but like I said, you know, it's changed its forms, sometimes as a speaker, sometimes as an Ayurvedic doctor, a healer, or a writer. And I feel like for anyone who's authentic, that realization happens very early on in life because you do become an outlier.
Yeah. Okay, great. And can you describe a personal habit that contributes to your well-being so you can do all of what you do in the world?
I'm a morning person. And so no matter where I am at, I will wake up in the mornings at it's called Brahma Muhurta in Ayurveda and yoga, which is like 90 minutes before sunrise. I love the quiet. I'm a pretty chatty person, if you can't already tell. And I'm an extrovert, and my work requires me to be with people. That's my moment of self-care. Sipping on warm water, you know, doing my oil pulling, drinking my cup of chai. And that's no matter where I travel. These habits travel with me. And I feel like it keeps me stable and grounded and prepared for whatever the day throws at me.
I love that. Okay, so much goodness in that. And what superpower did you discover you had only to realize it was there all the time?
Self-reliance. You know, I grew up, you know, I went to boarding schools, I've lived in hostels, I've grown up across three continents. So what that means, I've always been surrounded with people. And I used to assume that, you know, I need to be with people to be able to get to the next level. But I think it's very, over the years, sure. But in losing my dad, I realized, no, like I have to do my healing and I have to learn to rely on myself. And, you know, because in our house, my husband was grieving too. My brother, my mother-in-law, my husband's sister, all of that. And I was like, the expectations is the root cause. It's like termites of death of every relationship. So the more I relied on myself, and some days that meant going doing extra yoga, sometimes that meant hiking, sometimes being, face down in a pecan pie, whatever worked on that day. So being self-reliant taught me everything. Every relationship is an added bonus, and you're not taxing them or yourselves.
Love that. And what advice would you give your younger self, say your 25-year-old self?
It's going to be okay. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be rebellious. It's okay to be frustrated because you know what? Then it's out of your system. I'm in my 40s now and I'm like, I don't want to do the things I did in my 20s. And I can say that with confidence because I allowed myself to be 20 when I was in my 20s. So continue doing the same, pardon my friend, stupid stuff if you're going to do, because then it'll just be out of your system. And when you turn a chapter, you'll be like, I'm glad I did that. I have no temptations.
And do you identify as a feminist?
I do, but I also acknowledge male allies, like my dad, my husband, two men that I can think of. I wouldn't have been where I am. And my husband disagrees. He said, no, you would have still done all of this. I was like, maybe so. But imagine the constant fight at home. If I had to, like, if every day was an argument, I wouldn't have the relationship, and like, how toxic would the environment be? And the fact that my dad told me when I was a little girl, like, there are repercussions to living on your terms, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't. And like his sisters, they were all doctorates, dean of colleges, but they would also come home and want to cook meals for their families. So I grew up with that balance of you don't have to be one or the other, be a humanitarian before everything else. So, and yes, women's rights are extremely, extremely important to me because in Hinduism, we the lotus, the sorry, the goddess of knowledge is a woman, Saraswati, and goddess of Lakshmi is goddess of wealth. So I've grown up reading these texts where you worship women, but we also grew up in a world where that wasn't happening. So I think being a humanitarian has been very, very grounding for me.
Okay. And what are you reading right now? What's on your nightstand?
Finish reading, and I'm blanking out of the name. Literally finished reading on Monday this book. It's a nonfiction book about passion, how to grow your passion, 25 questions. It was very interesting because I was reading that on my flight back from my doctoral graduation ceremony, and the gentleman sitting in the middle seat was like leaning over, so I couldn't make notes. So I have to reread that book, and it was really good. I want to say it's like Finding Your Passion is the name.
Oh yeah. We'll link to that in the show notes. You can send me the whole title
Yes, I will do that.
after, and we'll definitely link to that. And listeners will love, knowing what our guests are reading, and we have a whole list of books. And Shweta Vikram, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show today.
Likewise, it's been incredible talking to you. And I mean, I know your work is very profound, but to be in conversation where you really made me pause and think and apply Ayurveda and mindfulness from a woman's perspective and a feminist perspective and women's health perspective.
I love that. Thank you so much.
That's it for our show today. Remember, if you need support to live your well woman life, head over to wellwomanlife.com. As a reminder, we are on NPR every week, so be sure to tune in at npr.org/podcasts and search for the Well Woman Show. If you enjoyed today's show, please take a moment and subscribe and leave a review. This helps raise visibility, which is super helpful when it comes to producing the show every week. For feedback, comments, or just to let me know you were listening, find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Well Woman Life. I'm Giovanna Rossi for the Well Woman Show. Until next time, have a super powerful week.